I am Adrienne Keller. I'm presenting two of the presentations in this session, but Vanessa Miller, who was supposed to moderate it, could not be here this morning, so she asked me to also moderate it, which I am going to do. However, I'm moderating it from the stance of knowing nothing about my co-presenters, so we will each introduce ourselves. I am the research director of the National Social Norms Institute at the University of Virginia. I am an associate professor of public health sciences there. By training, I'm a behavioral epidemiologist, and I've worked in the area of mental health and substance abuse prevention with a particular emphasis on university students for over 25 years now. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose, but the National Social Norms Institute was started with a gift from the Anheuser-Busch Foundation. The projects that I work on currently have funding from a variety of sources, which you can see here. As it happens, the information that I'm presenting in this presentation is not funded by any of these sources. It's based on my own research interests, but particularly because I do work at an institute that was begun with industry funding. Even though I have no personal financial relationships, I wanted to include this in a full disclosure. I am going to be going quickly, I hope not too quickly, with a very brief review of the problems, a brief look at what we know, our research question, our sample, our measures, our results, finally, the limitations of those results and the conclusions that we can draw from them. So, depression in college students. I'm not going to belabor this point. Probably most of you are very aware that it is not only a problem for up to 15% of college students at any one time actually qualifying for a diagnosis of depression, but it seems to be an increasing problem, as you can see from the first quote on this slide. Let's look at a little data. This is the data that I will be using consistently, actually in both of my presentations. It's the American College Health Association's National College Health Assessment. This is version 2, which was first went live in 2008. This is from their spring survey. Participating schools need to do random sample surveys in order to qualify. So just under 96,000 students constitute the sample in this survey. Within the last 12 months, what percent have experienced? Almost half of the students filling out the survey, hopelessness. Most of the students, by far, felt at times overwhelmed. Exhausted by things other than physical exercise, again, a vast majority of students. Very lonely, a majority. Very sad, a majority. So depressed that it was difficult to function, almost one third. Overwhelmed by anxiety, almost a half. Overwhelming anger, a little over a third. About 10% were actually diagnosed with depression in the last 12 months. Drinking probably needs even less justification as a problem for college students than depression does. In one study by Knight et al. In 2002, they reported that 31% of the college students in their sample met the criteria for a diagnosis of alcohol abuse in the past 12 months. The NIAAA's A Call to Action, published in 2002, says that 4 in 5 college students drink, and about half of the drinkers engage in heavy episodic consumption. And again, turning to the ACHA-NCHA data, we see that when asked, how many drinks did you have the last time you partied, socialized, over how many hours did you have that drink, those drinks, the ACHA combines that with information on sex and weight to estimate blood alcohol content. Over one third of the respondents would have had a likely blood alcohol content greater than 0.08. And look at the number who said they had 5 or more drinks the last time they partied or socialized, almost two thirds. Again, a little over one third said that they had had 5 or more drinks in one sitting at least once in the past 2 weeks. We also know that depression is strongly associated with alcohol abuse. Again, we have a number of studies that document this specifically within a college population. This is also true within a general population. As a behavioral epidemiologist, one of the things that I have frequently studied is comorbid diagnoses of mental illnesses and substance abuse disorders. We also know that heavy drinking is very associated with experiencing negative consequences as a result of your drinking. There's a direct, strong, and statistically significant association in every study that's ever been done of college students drinking and negative consequences between the amount of drinking and the amount of negative consequences experienced. That, again, is true for everyone, not just for college students. And again, I'll use the ACHA data to illustrate this. In this case, this is from a consortium of colleges who work directly with the National Social Norms Institute. And you'll be hearing more about them in my later presentation, so I'm not going to go into a great deal of detail about it now. These are 8 colleges and universities from across the states. As you can see, we have data from 2002, 2004, 2006, and 2008. And down at the bottom, their drinking is classified according to quantity and frequency. Those who were low on both quantity and frequency are in our low risk group. Those who were high on one of the two, either quantity or frequency, were in our medium risk group. And those who were high on both quantity and frequency are in our high risk group. So a pretty straightforward definition of risk. Here's what the negative consequences looked at like. Not surprisingly, the low-risk group were consistently very low on negative consequences. The medium-risk group, much higher on negative consequences. And the high-risk group doubled the probability of negative, or the number of negative consequences experienced. These are all means, of course, from what the medium-risk group. So a very straightforward linear correlation. Between the frequency and amount that you drink and the amount of negative consequences you experience. So we know depression's a significant problem. We know that risky drinking's a significant problem. We know that depression and risky drinking are correlated. We know that risky drinking and negative consequences are correlated. So what more do we need to know? Well, what we were interested in was, does depression increase the probability of experiencing the negative consequences of drinking? This is our intervention logic model, or part of it, that we used for directing social norms interventions. Again, I'll be going through this in more detail in my later presentation. For right now, what I want to do is actually replace the misperceived norms with depression. So we know that we start out on the left with the association between alcohol misuse and depression. What if we treat the depression so that we actually decrease depression? Our question is, will negative consequences decrease even if the personal alcohol misuse remains the same? That's what we're looking at. Now, our sample, as I said earlier, it's 8 universities. For this part of the study, I didn't use the full year's data that we have available. You'll see I used only 2008, 2009. So we have 7,606 students in this sample. It's about 65% female. The year in school is pretty evenly divided among them within our sample. Sorry. The mean age, not surprisingly, is just about a 22. Look at that age range. It's very broad. 93% of our sample are full-time. The race, again, as is kind of typical, whites are somewhat overrepresented. About 10% of our sample belong to fraternities and sororities, and about a third were in university housing. So I mentioned briefly earlier that the ACHA instituted a new version of the NCHA, their assessment. In 2008, but they did allow schools who had already been using the previous version to continue that. So for this presentation, I'm looking at the original version of the National College Health Assessment. There were 16 questions related to depression, which we combined into an additive scale. We used estimated blood alcohol content as our measure of drinking. There are 7 negative consequences, which again we combined into an additive scale. And of course, as you've already seen, we used the demographic data from that survey. So the additive scale for depression. Well, there are these 7 questions that were asked: how many times in the last 12 months have you felt? And those were answered on a scale from 0 equals never to 6 is more than 10. So those questions were put into our scale with their recorded value. And then these questions were all simply yes or no questions that were also included in our scale, including whether academic performance was hurt by depression, sleep difficulty, or stress. That gave us a scale range with a maximum value of 50. And you can see here what our scale distribution looked like. Here's the estimated blood alcohol content. The maximum value is 0.3 because we eliminated students with greater than 0.3. This is somewhat controversial. We did this on the advice of our medical director. Frankly, we're now trying to talk him into raising that to a 0.4 limit, but he felt that anyone who said that they had a blood alcohol content of over 0.3 was likely artificially inflating the amount that they drank. So our results are a bit attenuated. These are the negative consequences that were included. Again, it was yes, no, whether you had experienced any of these within the school year. And since this was the spring survey, it would have been most of the school year that was included. And here's what that scale looked like in scale distributional properties. So our analytic strategy, we tested the associations with a stepwise linear regression. Our dependent variable was negative consequences. That's what we were trying to predict. In our first step, we put in all of our demographic and descriptive variables: age, sex, race, year in school, residence, full-time, part-time enrollment, fraternity, sorority membership. Our step two was our measure of alcohol consumption, and finally our step three was our measure of depression. So finally, the results. What do our results look like? Well, here's our table from our analysis. I've highlighted in yellow for you. Remember, step one is demographics. Step two is amount that you drank, EBAC, and step three is depression. So depression has a small but significant, statistically significant at least, contribution to explaining the amount of negative consequences. All right, that's great, but what does that really look like in the real world? Well, we divided our group into those who binge drank according to the NIAAA current definition, which would be for females consuming 4 or more drinks within a 2-hour period, for males consuming 5 or more drinks within a 2-hour period, or for everyone having an estimated blood alcohol content greater than 0.08. So that's our no binge part of our sample. Everyone else fell into the binge drinking group by definition. And then for our depression scale, we simply divided them by percentages into low, medium, and high. So approximately 1/3 of our sample is in the low depression group, a second third in the medium, and the final third in the high. The numbers run about like this. The low depression group has scores from 0 to 6. The medium depression group had scores on our scale from 7 to 15. And the high depression group had scores greater than 15. So what, and The y-axis notice is number of negative consequences that were experienced. So in our low depression group, those who did not binge have a very low number of negative consequences. Slightly higher, but still low for the mid-depression group, and slightly higher, but still low for the high depression group. But again, among those students who didn't binge, we can see a very linear relationship between our assessment of depression and their experience of negative consequences. For the binge drinking group, the low depression had much higher negative consequences, of course, than for the non-binge group. In the medium depression, we have some elevation from the low depression group in the experience of negative consequences, and then significant elevation. So as you can see, when we control for the amount drunk, we still have a significant relationship between depression and the experience of negative consequences associated with drinking. All right, this study has a lot of limitations. The first limitation is our measures. We had to work with what we had. We didn't design the survey. We used data that was available to us. So our definitions, particularly of depression, are susceptible to a lot of criticism. And as you could see in the earlier slides, the distributional properties were far from appropriate, or far from at least a normal distribution. Frankly, this is the easiest way to present the results in a presentation, but probably not the ideal way to analyze results with such extremely non-normal distributions. Our sample, we have some underrepresented demographic groups in our sample, and also the NCHA has relatively low response rates. For the schools participating in our sample, the response rates actually vary tremendously. I think our lowest response rate was around 20%, but our highest response rate was over 80% because they used an actual in-person incentives to go into classrooms and have students log on and be able to do the survey right there. They've since changed that methodology, unfortunately. It's being too expensive. And as I've already said, our analytic property is not best given the distributional characteristics of our variables. However, you could see in that final graph that beyond the fancy statistics, you can just see in the descriptive statistics the relationship. So the conclusions that we can draw is that depression does seem to increase the probability of experiencing negative consequences, particularly when associated with risky drinking. Remember that these results are very rudimentary. However, if confirmed, they would have important implications for harm reduction. If our goal is to prevent those negative consequences, then clearly it's very important that we pay attention to the status on depression as well as on drinking. Thank you very much.